Congress stops, looks, and listens. At what and for how long? Our subject today on Capitol Cloakroom.
From the nation's capital, CBS Radio brings you the 942nd presentation of Capitol Cloakroom. This week's guests are Senator Edmund Muskie, Democrat of Maine, and Senator Carl Mundt, Republican of North Dakota. Now here is CBS News correspondent David Shoemaker.
Even before Congress opened this year, the Democratic leader of the Senate, Mike Mansfield, sent a letter to 17 committee chairmen, a letter which almost everyone agrees has set the tone for the current session. In his letter, Mansfield urged each chairman to start a top-to-bottom reevaluation of major federal programs, both new and old. According to the Senate leader, much of the legislation enacted in the past few years has, and these are his words, rough edges, overextensions, overlaps, and perhaps even significant gaps. In his State of the Union message, the president, too, advocated a thorough reevaluation of government programs. Now that everyone agrees it should be done, much of the work falls on the government operations committees of Congress. In the Senate, that means our guests today, Edmund Muskie, Democrat, the chairman of the Intergovernmental Relations Subcommittee, and Carl Mundt, the ranking Republican on the committee. Senator Muskie, in December, you predicted that the focus during the coming session would be not so much on policies, but on procedures. This seems to be as good a place as any to begin. How can you separate policies and procedures, and what did you mean when you said that?
Well, you can't really, but in order to make a point, sometimes you have to suggest that you can. Inevitably, if you're involved in procedures, you're interested in knowing what will happen substantively with a change in procedure. So I think that the words you've quoted are more rhetoric and perhaps clarify the point that we're trying to make. What I was trying to indicate was that now, especially in the last Congress, two sessions, we've enacted a lot of substantive programs, particularly in the intergovernmental field. That is, programs that depend for their effectiveness and their implementation not only upon federal agencies, but upon the agencies of state government and upon local governmental agencies, and indeed some non-governmental agencies in some programs at the local level. And that we must be concerned with whether or not this relationship is so organized as to make these programs work most efficiently, effectively, and economically. We're concerned from the point of view of the federal administrator at the top, who's responsible for what happens at the bottom. We're concerned also with the beneficiary of these programs, whether the beneficiary is a citizen or a group or a community or a region or a state. And we're concerned from his point of view as to whether or not he can get at these programs, understand them, and apply them.
Senator Mundt, I wonder if the Republicans are willing to accept this as the definition of the problem. It seems to me that many candidates in the last election successfully campaigned on the idea that we're just trying to do too much. It's not a case of reorganization, it's a case of chopping.
Well, one of the silver threads of consistency which sort of ran through many of the congressional and senatorial campaigns last year, and of course an off-election year is a guerrilla war. You don't have necessarily the same issues in the same areas, but in going back over the arguments which were used, I think that there was general agreement on the suggestions that Senator Muskie has mentioned about the necessity to study and review, and that you mentioned that Majority Leader Mansfield said in the opening day of the session, or in the letter to the Democratic chairman that was made public, that he thought this was should be kind of a go-slow Congress in terms of coming up with new ventures. I refer to it as the three R's of Mansfield: review, revise, and retrench, that, as I interpret that, but at least it's a study of it. Now, I think the one addition to what Senator Muskie has said that is in this silver thread of consistency that I mentioned among Republicans is a general feeling, which I might say is shared by many Democrats and is not necessarily shared by all Republicans, but it is a kind of a Republican position that in part of this reorganization business, there should be a return to local governments, part of the tax collected by the federal government, thereby better enabling it to upgrade its functions, which is one of the things we discussed in our hearings and legislation. We want them to do it, and they've got a financial problem. And one way to help them with the financial problem, at least, is they could share in part of the money collected from the income tax. So with that one addition, I would say, yes, the Republicans pretty well agree with what Senator Muskie has said.
I think that the two points that You have made, and the Senator Mott has made, are both part of this whole dialogue. I think that cutting programs is certainly a way to reduce the coordination problem, and that that issue will arise with respect to appropriations before the Senate and the House, and even authorizing legislation. Of course it will. It's a proper issue to raise, and it's one way of making sense out of things that some senators may think don't make sense. This question of tax sharing, so-called, is a most interesting one, and I think one that's most timely. Now, I don't know how far we want to go in this program, because that's a pretty broad question, but let me just make this point, that it seems to me that no one really has proposed pure tax sharing. By pure tax sharing, as I would define it, we would let each state, in effect, keep a flat percentage of the federal revenues generated within its borders. Period. Now, if we were to do that, this would discriminate heavily against the poorer states in favor of the wealthier states, because the federal tax sources are not equitably distributed among the states.
I interpolate there, and some of the proposals, instead of keeping a percentage, suggest that they distribute on a population.
Well, this is
a little deviation.
Yeah, this is the second point I wanted to make. The first point I wanted to make is that no one really proposes pure tax sharing, that there have been several modifications suggested. One is the one that Senator Mott has just raised, that is, that the distribution be on the basis of population. Another modification that's been suggested is that special provision be made for metropolitan areas. A third provision that's been suggested is that an extra dividend be paid to the poorer states. Well, these are three modifications. Now, the point I'm making is that when you speak of modifications of this kind, you are then converting your tax-sharing proposal from a tax-sharing proposal to another kind of grant and aid. And we have a lot of grant and aid programs. Really, it seems to me there are three appeals, and I'll try to make these brief so that I won't hog the time. There are three appeals to tax-sharing, and I'd like to have Senator Mott to respond to them, too. One, that it carries the idea that the states keep within their borders money that's been collected from their citizens. Two, that it gives the states more discretion to spend the money than they are given under traditional grant and aid programs. And three, that there is no state matching requirement that ties up state funds now available for non-aided activities. These are the three appeals to the tax sharing proposal. And what I'm saying is that, except for the first one, which is not really offered by anyone who has put forward a tax sharing proposal, the other two can be developed in connection with our traditional grant and aid programs by broadening categories, by reducing state matching requirements. And I think this is the area within which the tax sharing debate may emerge.
The only comment I would care to make, that when you introduce too many of the elements of points two and three, as you enumerate them, you begin to reintroduce the very evils that they're alleged to be there, and they're trying to eliminate by too much federal control. If you say we're going to give you tax sharing to engage in a certain program which you conduct in a certain way, then you're right, this is another grant and aid program under another name, but it doesn't meet the objections of the governors and the local people and the legislators, who feel they should have a more determinative authority in how these various programs for uplifting society are implemented in their own area.
When you discuss strengthening state governments, improving relationships, coordination between the federal government and local governments, you inevitably come to some form of a tax-sharing proposal. And then you immediately come against the rock of, can it be done, particularly this year, mostly because of Vietnam. What do you see is the job before your subcommittee when you talk about reorganization in realistic terms
this
now?
This would not come before the subcommittee. I take it this would go to the Finance Committee if there's serious consideration.
When you consider tax sharing, yeah.
When you outline
the overall problem of reorganization of government, what realistically can we expect to see in the coming session?
Well, it seems
Where
to
do
me,
you start?
As I said at the outset of my hearings in the fall, there are three approaches to this this problem. One, combining programs to make them more rational. We have programs that we've created here in the Congress that are duplicative, overlapping, and so on. So by legislative action, combining programs is one way of rationalizing and making more simple this whole problem of administration. Secondly, the reorganization of government itself and the president's proposal to combine commerce and labor in the Department of Business and Labor and Business is just that kind of a proposal, because it's designed to bring together in one agency the manpower and economic development program so that you don't have proliferation of administration. And then the third road is to try to create some coordinating device or institution in the federal government that will go to work when you've exhausted the possibilities of the first two approaches. Now, this may be an oversimplification, but it suggests three areas of activity by the Government Operations Committee.
Well, Senator Munt, Senator Muskie has opened several areas, and we noted, in, as you mentioned, this proposal to merge commerce and labor. There's been reaction from both commerce and labor that they want their own special departments. Each agency of government has its constituency. There are vested interests. How are you going to tackle this?
I would hope that our Government Operations Committee this year would pursue the line suggested by Senator Muskie, all of which are perfectly valid and perfectly important. But I would like to add to them a fourth. I think the time has now come when our executive department needs the guidance and the assistance and the counsel of what, for want of a better name, I would call another Hoover Commission. I think the Hoover Commission years ago did a tremendous job. And while all of its suggested reforms were not implemented, one could not expect that, a great many were. A lot of extra efficiency was introduced into government, some real economies. Well, a long time has elapsed. We've had wars in between, and we've had new kinds of welfare programs, and a war on poverty, and a lot of other ventures in which the government has become involved. And I would like to see our committee head come up and recommend another Hoover-type commission, which, as I recall, was never criticized because it was partisan in nature or prejudiced, did a very commendable job. People disagreed about its results, but its dividends were very rich and very rewarding, and I think the time has come for another study. Now, that I relate to what you mentioned about a single department to handle both labor and commerce. Labor leaders have opposed it. Business leaders have opposed it. Now, had a Hoover Commission gone into that, they would have held a lot of hearings and brought about a meeting of minds, if possible, before the suggestion were made. This proposal, if it is a good one, is being killed in advance of a hearing by a lot of people taking firm positions against it, and a lot of face-saving would be involved for them to change. And I think a Hoover-type commission has that great advantage in addition to the others.
Well, what about it, Mr. Chairman? This is also being heard from Republicans on the House side, the idea that there's a need for a new Hoover commission.
I think it may be. The legislation's been introduced in the Senate. Senator Pearson, I think, sent them on as a co-sponsor. I didn't get around to it. I might be a co-sponsor. I haven't quite got around to it, but
you've talked about the management muddle. It seems to me you should co-sponsor.
Well, it's not a question of whether or not. The only thing I was debating in my own mind is not whether or not the job needs to be done, but whether this is the way to do it at this point. I think it may be. I think it certainly is a piece of legislation that ought to be introduced, ought to be brought to the committee, and we ought to seriously consider it. We do have an existence now, you see, under legislation which Senator Munt, I think, co-sponsored back in 1959 with me, the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations, you see. And that kind of an agency didn't exist when the Hoover studies were made, so I wanted to look at the relationship between that commission and this proposed up-to-date Hoover Commission before I made a final decision on how it ought to be worked out. But the job that Senator Munt's talking about needs to be done. I think we do need, and as I said before, that's one of the three approaches we have to take. Another reorganization of the federal branch.
Another approach that you mentioned, and when you listed three, Senator Muskie, was an idea for a need for coordination, perhaps an agency of coordination. What would be your reaction to that, Senator Munt?
Well, I'm always a little bit allergic to creating new agencies. I'm not just sure that I would be fair in my description of what Senator Muskie has in mind without knowing more about it. But if it involves a proliferation of another agency, I go in with two strikes against it in my own mind. I'm not sure. I think maybe Senator Muskie should dilate on that a little bit.
Yes. Well, the hearings that we started last fall, Carl, and that we are going to resume shortly, are geared to that proposal. And as I said at the outset of those hearings, I'm not offering this as the magic answer, but I offer it as a vehicle to draw the hearings around a point. And the point is whether after we have combine programs as much as we can, legislative, you know, after we've reorganized as much as we can, then will the thing work without some coordinating device? Now, what I proposed, in effect, is another tool in the office of the president, like the budget office. As a matter of fact, the Bureau of the Budget now has whatever responsibility there is in the executive branch for coordinating programs, but it has never staffed it and never implemented it because it's a little different than its budget functions. And as a matter of fact, I get
pretty
the...
Pretty closely related.
It's
yeah.
related.
Yes.
And so the question is whether we beef up that function of the Bureau of the Budget, or perhaps just split the two like Siamese twins in the office of the president and have the same thing done under a different agency. So what we're talking about the function now, what we name it, or whether we keep it in the Bureau of the Budget or just sitting beside it in the White House is I think an unimportant question.
Certainly the coordination needs to be brought about. There's no question about that. And probably after we're through with the rules reorganization discussion in the Senate, we're going to take up, I believe the majority leader has scheduled for early consideration, the reorganization of the Congress, which as a coordinate branch of government fits in very neatly with this other. You can't just reorganize the executive department unless the Congress is tooled up to do the job. And one of the recommendations which we have made in that commission report is to create one new function for each legislative committee, and that is to give it what we call a legislative review officer or staff member, whose responsibility it is to make a report to the committee and to the Congress in writing every year, and part of which is directed to this coordination program, because I think our committee, for example, like the President's Bureau of the Budget, could do a better job than we're doing of bringing about coordination. And we both suffer from the same thing, limitations of staff, limitations of time. But Congress should exert some pressures all along to bring about these coordinations, I think, also.
Well, this is in line with your and my interest over 4 years now, I think, to establish congressional or periodic review of grant and aid programs. We've gotten it through the Senate twice. It's been bogged down in the House.
And get it
so, yeah, so as I understand this proposal, and you're a member of that Monroe Committee on Congressional Reorganization, you're following through on what we've been trying to do
precisely.
A little more
and fixing a responsibility. Theoretically, every legislative committee is supposed to have what they call an oversight function. It was a poor name in the first place. That's exactly what eventuated. We just overlooked it. So we changed the name to Review Specialist and make them make a report, and it's cranked into that same concept.
Well, this, traditionally, Congress has hesitated to increase the size of its staffs. It doesn't want to have to go back to the voters and talk about more office buildings, things like that. But do you think that now Congress is ready to do this oversight function as the real definition of the word would be?
Well, it's hard to guess. We've got 100 reforms written into this, and I'm sure Congress isn't going to buy them all, and this might be one, but I think on this one we might have pretty good luck. It isn't a big increase in staff membership. It's one for each committee, really, and measured against executive staffs downtown, the executive agencies, it's just a very, very small function that we have collectively up here that way. And I would hope that that would be one of the reforms that Congress would buy. The committee recommended it unanimously. Both houses, both parties, everybody concerned, unanimously thought this is a job that needs to be done.
Well, as one non-member of the committee, Carl, you have my vote already.
I'm sure I would.
It isn't even on the floor.
Wonderful. Well, we're making headway.
Well, what about the immediate problem? Senator Muskie, when it comes time to decide on an issue such as should an agency of government be broken up, the poverty program, for instance, is Congress today equipped to handle that kind of an investigation, the stop, look, and listen type of a review that Senator Mansfield has urged?
I think it is, if we're willing to equip ourselves with the tools. I don't think we should go hog wild on taking on people. They can get in your hair if you have more than you need. But on the other hand, I think that the Congress is more likely to resist taking on additional help when it needs it, and thus lag behind its responsibilities. I think the proposal that Senator Mudd has described is a sensible one, and I think that if we concentrate on this job, of review, that we can do it. From my point of view, I've been working at it, as Senator Mont has, for 3 or 4 years on this subcommittee. Been what Senator Mansfield's proposed, we've been working at for 3 or 4 years. And so this call to arms is right down our alley. We like it.
Precisely.
It's interesting work. It can be productive, and it isn't a dry academic exercise because it's involved with the people whose welfare is tied up in these programs.
Well, we're all agreed then this is an idea whose time has come. If I could ask you, not only as members of your committee, but as the senior members of your party that you both are, what do you think is the outlook for some of the Great Society legislation? Are we just going to have some cutback in funds? Is this coming Congress going to see a major overhaul? What? Speaking politically now.
Well, I'm sure there'll be pretty vigorous debates on cutbacks of funds. I don't see how anyone could look at this Congress and not expect that. Now, what the outcome will be is more difficult to predict. The president, of course, has put a damper on these programs himself to a greater degree than he would have if he weren't tied up with the war. So you've already got a built-in cutback on these programs. The question then is whether the Congress will do what it did last year and go beyond the president's recommendations. I think it is more likely to stay down to the president's recommendations and even below it. Now, on the major overhaul, this is going to take some time. Because if we spend the time in this session to really go into these programs in depth, to see where they're working, what ought to be done, probably we will at most produce the raw material for legislation at the next session. Now, to the extent that we can accelerate the legislative process resulting from the overview function, we will. But I think we would do better to realize that we may have to concentrate on that aspect of it in the next session.
I certainly agree with what Senator Muskie said in the first part of his reply, that I think that this Congress is going to be disposed to spend less rather than more than the executive recommends in these areas of new ventures in the field of social welfare. But in addition to that, I would think that in some areas, at least, there would be a rather determined effort to provide substitutes for programs which demonstrably either have failed or have failed to live up to expectations. I see one evidence of that, I think, today. Senator Percy of Illinois, with a lot of co-sponsors, has issued a statement for an entirely new approach to the matter of housing, which arrives at the goal that public housing people talk about, but which uses an altogether different formula. I would think that in some areas there'd be a determined effort to substitute for something which is not living up to expectations, something which gives more promise of fulfillment.
Well, Senator Mont, then, is one of the sharpest eyes in the Senate. You don't really see that there's going to be any massive repeal of the Great Society. This is
I think would be a repeal. You'd have to repeal what you have and substitute. I don't think there's going to be a repeal of the goal or the objective of trying to alleviate poverty or provide better education or whatever, but I think that there will be substitute programs which in themselves would necessitate a repeal of what we have to create the vacuum to put something else.
Gentlemen, Senator Muskie, Senator Mont, thank you very much for being our guests today on Capitol Cloakroom.
You have been listening to the 942nd meeting in Capitol Cloakroom. This week's guests were Senator Edmund Muskie, Democrat of Maine, and Senator Carl Mont, Republican of North Dakota. CBS News correspondent David Shoemaker was the moderator. Produced by Ellen Watley and Prentice Childs, Capitol Cloakroom originates in Washington, D.C. Capitol Cloakroom is a recorded production of CBS News.